Welcome to the Consulting Pipeline Podcast. My guest today was Robert Games. I'm going to share the conversation he and I had with you very shortly. I actually just got off the call with Robert, and I'm still feeling really excited because in our conversation, Robert really lays out step by step, detail by detail, how he has implemented a market research process that I advocate, which is doing market research by actually talking to prospective buyers in the market. That's where I believe you get the highest fidelity picture of what problems they're dealing with, what they need solutions for. And that leads to when you notice a pattern after talking to multiple people in the same vertical and you spot a pattern, that leads to formulating some sort of value proposition hypothesis for them, some sort of idea about, well, there's the problem. How could I solve that? And how could I solve that in a repeatable way? And these are some of the underpinnings of a really valuable specialized expertise. When you see a problem that's consistent, it helps if it's painful, if it's important, if there's some urgency behind it, and you come up with a solution to it, this really is developing self-made expertise. Your solution may not be, you know, totally proprietary, totally unique, but it comes from you having spotted a problem in the market that maybe nobody else has seen, or maybe relatively few others have seen and are trying to solve. So it creates uniqueness, almost inherently creates uniqueness, because there's few other people that have gone to the trouble of having these conversations and therefore noticing the problem that you've noticed. So what you're going to hear as you hear me interview Robert is you're going to hear him describe this process in motion with two different verticals. The first one, the research worked and led him to a point where he wanted to look into a different vertical. And he applied the same process to the second vertical, and the research worked again. And you hear him now move into talking about building a solution to that problem. So in a way, I would describe it as like a picture-perfect case study of someone applying this research methodology to gain insight into a market. And Robert's very generous with answering all my specific questions about, you know, how did you do that? And how did you deal with that? And all these little specific implementation details that really make a big difference in doing this stuff. So here we go. My conversation with Robert Games. Hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Robert Games, welcome to the program.
Hi, Philip. Thank you very much for having me.
I am so excited to talk to you. Some weeks ago, I emailed my list and was talking about a topic related to market research. You responded and described how you have been doing some market research to support changing your specialization so that you can build a new market position for your business. I looked at what you saw and was like, wow, this is great. we have to talk about this. And you graciously agreed to come on the program. So thank you for that. That's what we're here to talk about today. Let's start with just a little bit of context. Robert, what does your business look like today? Like, who are you and what do you do today?
Sure. Well, as already covered, my name is Robert Games. I help domiciliary care agencies attract more care assistants using digital marketing.
I love how crisp that is. So it was not always the case that's how you describe what you do, right?
No, not at all. I've been on a long journey. And to be honest, I'm still on this journey. And every day is, I suppose, an iteration, kind of improving on my knowledge and working on specializing. To give you maybe a little background, I met you a few years ago. At the time, I specialized in a content management system called Expression Engine. We discussed it and also some of the pitfalls of specializing in the CMS or a platform specialization was over time that the boom period, I suppose, would go and that the bubble burst and slowly over time there was less and less work. I decided to move over to the next nearest competitor, CMS, which was Craft CMS, which, you know, there's a fantastic market at the moment, but I'm going to have the same problem with platform specialization. I'm not really solving problems, I suppose, for expensive problems for clients. So with that, I was working in a co-working space, and I was just having a cup of coffee with a chap who owns a recruitment agency. Whilst we were just chatting over a coffee, he was telling me that he was having a real issue attracting passive candidates. So candidates that weren't quite looking for a job, it was more of a just kind of prior to them starting to look for a job. It seemed like an interesting problem he was having, and something that kind of poked my interest. I went away and had a little think about it. Mm-hmm. Asked him a few more questions just to find out, a bit more about the problem. At this stage, I thought it'd be really good if I could just speak to a few more recruitment agencies or recruitment agency owners to find out if this was a common problem, if this was something that was specific to him, and whether it's something specific to maybe his industry that he was specializing in.
Mm-hmm. So let me jump right in there and rudely interrupt you, Robert. So I'm sorry for stealing momentum from your story, but there's okay. Already so many things I want to ask about.
Sure, please go ahead.
So you've talked about how you saw the sort of decline in a platform that you were specialized in, Expression Engine. Mm-hmm. Let's dig into that a little bit. I imagine it's not just a simple thing, but why was the platform declining in popularity?
Sure. So there was one of the add-on developers, a company called Pixel and Tonic. They decided to release their own content management system called Craft CMS.
Right.
It essentially fixed all the issues that Expression Engine had. So they came up with a superior product, which meant all the developers moved away from Expression Engine.
Interesting. Okay.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Where I got most of my business from was large companies who've already had their business website built on Expression Engine, mm-hmm. and were looking to move away from their developer. So ironically, the decline in the developers moving from Expression Engine to Craft initially created a bubble,
right,
for me, because a lot of websites were being abandoned. And it was good pickings. I could take and leave what sites I wanted to.
I see.
Of course, over time, that's declined. And I too also made the jump to using Craft CMS as well.
What sort of time frame did you see in this decline? Like, maybe in terms of years, how many years did you see it coming before it really started to affect your business?
I would say a good 2 years. I had a solid base of clients behind me. So a slight decline wasn't a huge problem. But over time, inquiries became less and less. I used to get maybe 3 inquiries a week for Expression Engine development. Now it's probably down to about 3 a month.
Okay.
If that.
Yeah. That's... That's a story that gets repeated with a lot of platforms. It's not unique to Expression Engine. So that's why you said, Craft kind of stole Expression Engine's momentum, but let's not repeat this whole process again, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So you're talking to this this recruiter or this recruitment agent, somebody who works for a recruiting firm. How did you purposely set that conversation up, or it just was more like a chance meeting at your co-working space?
That was an absolute chance meeting. It was just one of these, we were having a cup of coffee. I asked how his day was going. As you do, you ask, how's business? And rather than the general, yep, everything's fine, he went into more detail. And we ended up sitting over a cup of coffee, really discussing in detail this issue he's having, with attracting passive candidates.
Can you break that down a little more? because I'm imagining how this must have gone, and imagining that he did not just right away say what the real problem was or what was keeping him up at night, or perhaps did he? How did it go?
No, I think I was in a stage, I'd come across the five whys, so kind of really digging into, you know, when someone asks something, why. Mm-hmm. I think I was trying to practice some of the skills that I learned by applying it to everyday conversations.
Nice.
I was chatting to him, you know, he said that he's got more more jobs than he has candidates. He's got more clients. Mm-hmm. Kind of, why is that? And I think he broke into the initial topic of we were going through. In terms of politics, England had just decided to leave the EU at that point. So there was a little bit of kind of friction in the air, and he said maybe it's due to that. Mm-hmm. But we discussed it more, and then he kind of really pinpointed down into the fact that. Active candidates are only a very small piece of the pie. Active candidates would be someone who's actively searching for a job, and they'll probably go onto job boards and apply for five, six, seven different jobs. And by that point, there's so much competition that you can't really get in there. He was saying that if you get a passive candidate, someone who's in their job life cycle was just about to turn into an active candidate, at that point it's best, because then they normally go to a recruitment agency and will stick with that recruitment agency to find them a job.
Interesting. Okay. So to explain for folks in the audience who maybe have not heard this idea of the five whys, can you kind of just briefly describe the idea?
Sure. Yeah. I like to think of it as being a five-year-old kid again. So when someone says, I'm just trying to think of an example now, but we use the recruitment agencies saying, I can't, you know, we're struggling to find candidates for jobs. And you say, well, why is that? And then they'll come up with another answer, which again, you're kind of, if you think of it like an onion, you've scraped off the top layer, you're onto the layer underneath, and they'll tell you another reason, and you'll ask, but why is that?
Right.
And if you, the theory is, if you ask it five times, by the time you get to the fifth, you've kind of got down to the real crux of the problem. You sound a bit silly if you go, why? So you kind of dress the question up in different manners, but it helps you just get to the bottom of the question. Was that a suitable kind of answer?
Beautiful, I think. Okay. Yeah, and you're right that if you think about it out of the context of an actual conversation, you think, I'm going to sound like an idiot, you know, like just continuing to ask the same question. But you're right that in the actual conversation, you will sort of modify the question slightly. You know, the question is one word, why? But you're going to say things like, well, why is that? Or why do you think that is? Or wait, can you explain more about why that happened? So you'll say it in different ways, and it will have a sort of natural quality to it. I'm so impressed, Robert, that you were practicing this just in daily life, because it sounds like this wasn't just practice. It turned into more than that.
Sure. Yeah. So by digging into that, I found maybe a root cause of the problem, or what he was really struggling with,
right.
Which also triggered within me an interest. I thought, well, actually, that's something I'd like to try and solve. I thought it'd be fun. Maybe it's something that kind of got me thinking.
Would you describe the problem as a purely technical problem, or was it more complex than that? And I'm not insulting purely technical problems. Sometimes they can be very complex, but the most complex problems are not just technical. They involve human elements or relationships or what have you. So what did the problem look like as you understood it from this conversation with this one guy?
Sure. To be honest, none of it was technical so much. It was about getting to these candidates at the right time.
Okay.
So in fact, take the technology away. It just so happens that that's my vehicle of choice, or my tool of choice. It is a personal problem, really. And it's just about finding these candidates at the right time.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. And that was interesting to you. Why?
Around that time, I've been doing a lot of research into different marketing methods to kind of help me with my business. A lot of things like Facebook advertising, but retargeting as well, and using audiences, so I could use some of this of what I've learned in my own kind of journey to market the business at that time of kind of expression engine development, and how I could end up using that as part of a solution to someone else's problem.
Got it. Okay. Very cool. So here we are. You've had this conversation. You've handled it beautifully, it sounds like, and you see a problem that is something we might call an expensive problem, right? At least for this guy. How did you know it was a painful problem for him?
So I think I ended up having just a couple more conversations with a few other recruiters who were in this co-working space.
Okay.
And they too said, almost echoed exactly what he said, just regarding kind of finding passive candidates. There just wasn't enough candidates really for any of the roles. I found out how they were currently going about finding candidates, and it was very much, I suppose if you look at it from marketing, it was very much outbound as opposed to concentrating on an inbound methodology.
Mm. How exactly did you make those conversations happen with these other recruiters?
So the really nice thing about a co-working space is you kind of see these people every single day.
Yes.
You walk past them, you'll have a cup of coffee. So a lot of this happened around the coffee machine.
That's great. Okay, so like even more specifically, you see this person, you know what they do roughly, and you say what? Could I ask you a few questions? Like what exactly would you say?
Sure. To be honest, It would start off very much as a how's your day going, because it is on that friendly level. You already know them on a name basis, and they'll sit down, they'll tell you what's going on with the day, and then they'll start saying, oh, I've had this trouble with this client, or I've had a candidate and they've just dropped out. And then you just generally, it kind of flows into a conversation of saying, how are you finding the market at the moment? Do you have enough candidates to fill the roles that you're getting at the moment?
Beautiful. At any time, does someone look at you like, how rude that you would ask that? Or, how nosy? How could you?
Never. It's a conversation that they love to have. And I think they love it even more because there's an outsider who's genuinely interested in what they have to say. I would say it's the opposite. No one's saying how rude. Everyone is thinking, oh, this guy's taking a genuine interest in me. I think it has the opposite effect.
That's okay. Incredible. Thank you. Thanks for suffering through all my nosy questions.
No, that's absolutely fine.
This stuff is, for a lot of people, strange and exotic stuff. It's intimidating, the idea of speaking to strangers, asking them very specific questions about their business, some of which relate to, business pain or emotional pain. So you're really doing folks a service here by describing exactly how this works. So you've had how many of these additional conversations would you say you had with other recruitment agents?
So there was two other recruitment agents in the co-working space. So just those. At that point, I felt it would be quite prudent to actually speak to a wider number.
Okay.
I gathered a list of kind of recruitment agencies across the UK. I gave a list of about 50, I think.
Okay.
I basically sent emails out to all of them, just asking if they would be interested in having a research call with me.
Okay. So was that basically it? Can you give a little more detail on what the emails looked like?
Sure. Yeah. So based on the very, very rudimentary kind of knowledge that I'd gained from speaking to the recruiters within the co-working space, I just drafted a quick email together, or a series of emails. And the first one just said something along the lines of, hey, are you having trouble kind of attracting passive candidates? And then kind of left it quite plain. And then a follow-up email went out saying, I'm doing some research on how recruitment agencies are currently targeting passive candidates and would love to speak to you as an MD of a leading recruitment agency. And then if I haven't heard a response, I was using an automated system, then it would send a follow-up email just to check, hey, would you like to chat about it?
Okay.
So it was very, very simple emails. There was no kind of magic to it.
Right. It sounds like, though, you had a little bit of or enough insight into the market so that you knew some of the terminology, like passive versus active candidates, that might not make any sense to an outsider, but you had started to understand how they speak. So what kind of response did you get to these emails?
Well, one of the fascinating things about recruitment, anyone in recruitment, is, you know, they're people. They love to have a chat with people, and in fact, I could learn a lot from them. Myself, I'm quite introverted, and I think generally recruiters are actually quite extroverted. But they're great. Their people skills are fantastic, and something we can all learn from. A lot of them wanted to pick up the phone and actually have a chat with me. So I had a link on the emails just to schedule a call via Calendly.
Okay.
I think in kind of straight off the bat, I had about 10 recruiters who wanted to have a chat with me.
Wow, that's great.
We got those calls scheduled in. I had those phone calls. Where basically it's a learning process each call. That the first one, you find out a little bit more information about what kind of struggles they're going through about passive candidates. Mm-hmm. You learn some more terminology. And then you walk away from the call, you do your next call, and you've learned a little bit from the previous person. So you use a bit more of the kind of vocabulary. By the time you finish your 10th call, you kind of look back at your first few calls and wish you knew what you knew then, so you could ask even more pertinent questions. So, I think it was kind of at this stage, I identified that actually this was a problem that all of these recruitment agencies suffered from.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very interested to see, I want to build a kind of proof of concept around it, which I was working on with the chap that I was speaking to in the co-working space.
Mm-hmm.
Just to do some kind of research and development, really.
Okay. So about maybe close to 15 conversations total. And how quickly did you start to see this pattern of, wow, yeah, they all seem to have the same problem, or a lot of them have a similar problem?
Almost immediately. I think the first call, the person was like, well, yeah, it's a massive problem. Everyone I spoke to, you know, again, agreed it's a big problem for them.
Mm. Okay. So pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. This looks to me thus far like a picture perfect market research project. You got about a 20% response rate, which is very, very good on, you know, cold email outreach. That's exceptionally good. And very quickly you see this pattern that looks to you like an expensive problem. So what do you do next? You had mentioned maybe some sort of prototype or proof of concept.
Sure. So I started working alongside the chap that was in the co-working space,
mm-hmm.
on, you know, actually applying my idea. So we were still fairly early stages with it. I had this kind of niggling feeling that obviously recruitment agencies, they come with quite a bad rap. You know, there's a lot of stigma that associated with them.
Right.
And I almost felt, you know, I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I did find that, you know, out and out, they're very good salespeople. Like I said, they're extroverts. They, and again, this is generalizing. There's some real inspiring people out there. There's a lot of, you know, they think about different theories about kind of how to target and how to work with different personality types. Mm. I was kind of getting eaten alive, I suppose, on some of those calls.
What do you mean by that?
So I think it was an expensive problem, and because it was an expensive problem, they were saying, well, you know, what are you trying to sell me? Sell me something, you know, come and solve this problem for me. Mm. But quite aggressively, and it was something that put me in a very uncomfortable made me feel very uncomfortable. And as an introvert, you know, this was really pushing the boundaries of what I was, you know, what I was comfortable with.
Okay. Interesting.
So I think at that stage, you know, I was looking at, well, how can I possibly minimize my interaction with the actual recruitment agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ideas I came across was, you know, if I were to try and develop it into a productized service, it would have very, very low touch. So I possibly could avoid any of the calls.
Okay.
with the recruitment agencies.
Okay.
but I think maybe you might agree with me that the only way to, I suppose, kind of build within a market vertical would be to have more conversations and really get to, you know your end clients.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine that myself in this same situation. And I know for me, there would be that feeling of the sunk cost of the research would start to influence my thinking. I mean, I would want it to not, but it would anyway. And I would say, okay, yeah, I can see this, you know, this market has a problem. It's a painful problem. When I talk to people, they like demand a solution. That's my interpretation of what you said.
Sure, sure.
About those sales calls. So a lot of the prerequisites are there for this to be a good opportunity. But personally, maybe interacting with these people is not very enjoyable for me. In fact, maybe I resist it. I don't want to do it. So I would try to protect the sunk cost. And I'm not sure, I'm not saying that's why you did that, but I would also, just like you, I think, be looking for some opportunity to make it work in a different way. And that sounds like that's what you were trying to do.
That's 100% what I was trying to do. It was, how can I hold on to all this data that I've gathered, but also take myself out of that situation. It was one that I didn't feel comfortable in. As you say, you spend a lot of time at work, you need to enjoy it. So it was something that I really wanted to take myself out of. And I think that overwhelming feeling for me was probably the final decider that actually this market vertical wasn't right for me. I'm not saying recruiters are bad or anything like that. In fact, I think the stigma that follows them is actually quite unjust. Mm. There really is some kind of inspiring recruiters out there. Some a bit more bullish, but you know, overall, I think, you know, they are a great bunch. I would like to say it's a bit more methodical, but at that point, I was thinking, well, I'm trying to shoehorn a productized service into something where it doesn't really belong.
Right.
There became an opportunity that just fell on my lap, really. I was working with a domiciliary care agency. I've built their website. I've been managing it for years. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to make some odd requests on their website. And again, out comes the five whys. It's probably the most powerful kind of tool in the toolkit for me.
You know, and, let me jump in right there. I apologize for interrupting, but
sure, no problems.
Blair Enns recently said something very similar, that your ability to have a conversation with a prospective client might be the most powerful business tool there is. It's almost exactly what you're saying. The ability to have a conversation where you're asking these questions that in another context might be considered intrusive, but you're asking them in a way where they're happy to answer them. Like, that is, I think, a superpower, because it gives you this insight that you can use to find ways to create more value. So I just want to add to what you said and say, I think that is a tremendously powerful tool. So you maybe have now built a habit of asking the five whys, and you're doing this with this in the States. Here it would be the home care industry, or anyway, go ahead, please.
So the home care industry is what someone, a service user, as it were, someone from the outside would describe as. Domiciliary care is an insider term that they would use to describe their services. So I was having a chat with him, and, you know, why do you want to make this change? And kind of, you know, because I want to make the page more appealing. And, you know, who are you trying to make this page more appealing to? To potential care assistants. And why is that important? And, you know, we got down to the bottom of it, and his business was suffering because he had more work, or service users, more clients than, or people needing help than he did carers. And as a result, the care would suffer a little bit, just because a carer couldn't spend as long with a person. Likewise, he would have to say no, and he had a waiting list of people needing care.
Right.
So I said to him, you know, this is interesting. I told him all about the work that I'd been doing with recruitment agencies,
right?
And this product that I was in early testing stages with the recruitment agency, which I was kind of abandoning,
right?
And I said, well, I'd written a white paper about it, and said, would you like to have a little read of this? And he read through it, and he came running back and said, I think this is fantastic. The early stages of this kind of recruitment funnel that you've designed is exactly what I need. Would you mind if, you know, can I pay you to implement this on my site?
Aren't those the most beautiful words you've ever heard? Can I please pay you to do this thing that you invented for me? It's so wonderful.
Sure. Sure. Let's give it a go. And I explained to him, look, this is on untested waters. And he goes, you know, I'm willing just to, you know, give this one a go.
Okay.
No problems. So we set up a very, very basic funnel for him, a kind of recruitment funnel. I thought about, you know, what care assist, and this is quite untested. I hadn't interviewed any, I wanted to interview some care assistants, but didn't really have any to talk to, to find about what their needs are. And we built this funnel, I get an email we launched it. I get an email from him about 40 minutes after launching it, saying, are these test applications coming through? And I was like, well, no, they're not test applications. and we had a look, and they'd already started filtering down this recruitment funnel, and it was sort of like, wow, we're actually onto something here.
Wow, very cool.
So, I mean, that was exciting, and you know, since then, I've done more conversations with him, you know, to find out the extent of the problem, to find out terminology that people use. I then said, right, okay, well, is this a problem specifically for him? Is he the only one? Is this an area thing? Is this what's causing the issue? Is it a locational thing? Mm-hmm. So I kind of went back round to the original idea when I went spoke to lots of recruitment agencies, and I devised a similar email thread and sent them out to recruitment. To the domiciliary care agencies. It is interesting to note that the response rate was lower.
Okay.
Now, I don't think it's because the problem was any less painful to them, just the personality types. I think there was more hesitance towards, was I trying to sell them something? They weren't as extroverted. In fact, I, to be honest, I think that their personality types are more in line with my own.
Right. I could see that. Yeah, it seems that this type of work might just attract people who are a little less extroverted by nature.
Sure. To be honest, they go into the work because an element of them is kind of a caring side, I suppose. So it's kind of fascinating. So I got less responses. The response rate wasn't as high. A lot of people wanted to do stuff on email. And the problem with email is you can't really do the five whys effectively.
Right, exactly.
So I did a few emails are great because I got a lot of terminology, which I created a spreadsheet of vocabulary that they use, which that's fantastic. But again, I got a few calls in and chatted it through with them. And yes, you know, there's another expensive problem that all of them can't get enough care assistance. So it was something that I started doing more research into. And this time I've built prototypes and I've done a lot of kind of surveys around that. So I've gathered up my own data. So now I've got this kind of arsenal of data, which I can say, for example, I can work out roughly how many people in an area are searching for care assistant jobs. It's all locational. So say you're within, a certain county, let's say Surrey, I can say, right, at the moment, each month there's 6,000 blah, blah, blah people looking for a care assistant job here. So I've got a lot of data to start backing up some of my, what I'm talking about.
Right. Okay, so, wow. Okay, I'm just so impressed at how well you've done this research. Tell me a little bit about the white paper. That seemed like that played an important role in getting this first client in the vertical.
Sure. So the white paper, do you remember, I think it was maybe a year and a half ago, you released an email about market penetration tests.
Yes.
That was the process that I actually used, in as much as I wrote a white paper surrounding it was kind of attracting passive candidates, essentially using inbound marketing, and it essentially just documented all of the kind of research that I was doing at the time and how to build up a kind of passive candidate recruitment funnel. And I use that as part of the market penetration test to send out to people to see how many people would sign up for to download this this white paper, which coincidentally was very high. So that was used more to validate the positioning of the kind of recruitment agency side of things. And it was just a kind of offshoot that just so happened I was speaking to someone in the domiciliary care industry who said, well, hey, do you fancy giving this a read?
That's great. So this looks, you know, pretty promising for a vertical focus for you. Like what's next? Are you now marketing to this vertical, or you know what do things look like now at this point in the story?
Right. So at this point in the story, it's hopefully it's an exciting stage. I've done my initial research. I've validated there is a problem. I was initially experimenting with a slightly different approach at the end of tail end of last year of actually building a job board out and then marketing the job board, which was again a fantastic thing because I got a lot of people signing up to it, and then I also got a good chance to try different marketing techniques to attract care assistants into the job board. But I've kind of sidestepped from that to go back into concentrating on the actual consultancy side of this, because I think that's where I can make more of a difference. So I've built a website, just a simple one-page website to target care assistants. So the very next step for me to do is to start targeting some care agencies and just sending out emails to see if I can get some more people to sign up.
That's wonderful. Sounds like we need to speak again in about 6 months and get the next chapter of this story. So like looking back over the research, it just all looks so perfect to me. But from your perspective, is there something you might have done differently to, you know, with the benefit of hindsight now?
I think that it's all a learning process. Yes. And if anything, picking the wrong market vertical in the first place was very beneficial to me because it almost allowed me to practice a lot of things in an environment where, and it was a good environment because everyone was very willing to chat.
Yes.
And everyone was very open. It was very, very helpful for me to do that. And whilst I suppose some people would look back and say, well, you know, if you'd gone straight in with the care agencies, I don't, you know, obviously maybe I'll be, you know, a year ahead of myself. I think overall, no, I'm quite happy with the way it's done. It certainly wasn't as smooth as perhaps it sounds. It was quite fortuitous. For example, the care agency had that specific problem at that time and contacted me.
Right.
It wasn't something that, it's something that kind of fell on my lap, really.
But I think that's very similar to how it is for most people in that there's all this opportunity out in the world, but we have access to a subset of that opportunity for whatever reason. You know, it might be because of location, or it might be because of relationships we do or don't have. So, you know, we're kind of working with whatever we have ready access to, or we can build access to. And so this is actually exactly the situation we're all in, is we sort of look at the options we have and I think pick the one that's the best match and go with it. And over time grow from there. But anyway, it's similar situation to what a lot of people face. Well, again, Robert, I'm so impressed with how you've approached this research. And, you know, I'm curious, aside from helping you identify opportunity, has it helped you in the sales process? I know I'm asking a bit of I don't mean to ask a leading question there. I guess I should say, you know, how has it helped in other ways? Sales, sure. Marketing, anything else?
I suppose all of those areas from just a sales point of view, I think I like most kind of developers or people within the tech industry, we're great at our jobs, but sales is not something we're naturally comfortable with.
Right.
And it's certainly helped me this kind of process be able to speak to people and ask and get more confident about asking those why questions, because it does feel very unnatural at first when you say, but why? Because you almost feel like I should know the answer to that. I think a lot of people are worried about asking the why in case it makes themselves look foolish.
Right.
So I suppose that's helped in a certain way to conquer those kind of fears and realize that actually people are more interested rather than thinking you're rude or you're foolish. So that's helped in terms of marketing. So what I've done with this, you know, it's allowed me to get the vocabulary that care agencies use. Mm-hmm. So I can write very, very specific marketing messages to them that they'll instantly be able to relate to.
Mm-hmm. Robert, thank you so much for sharing in such detail how you've approached this. It's so informative to have you lay it out this way. So thank you for that. How could folks see what you're up to or get in contact or do anything that you would like them to do as a next step?
Sure. So if they want to sort of have a look at the ongoing work, this is very much a work in progress. They can check out my website, which is careassistantmarketing.co.uk. And if they would like to send me an email, they're welcome to at rob@careassistantmarketing.co.uk.
That's it for my conversation with Robert Games. Hey, if you know someone who is maybe facing a similar situation where they'd like to do some market research, they want to specialize in a market vertical, they want to do that research to gain insight into the vertical, and they're not really sure how, maybe you know somebody who's facing that. If so, do them a favor. Reach down to your podcast player app, hit the share button, and share this episode directly with them. I think they'll appreciate it, and of course, I really appreciate it as well.